I want to share a little bit around some of my experience with inventory, because I was talking with Judith this morning, and Joe made the comment earlier yesterday, the way you get experience with writing inventory is you write inventory. And we've written a lot of inventory, and but I guess what I want to do, and sometimes it's difficult to really, really take the time to really go into inventory with a large group of people, but I felt a need. I want to share with you what I do when I'm working with someone, and it might help some of you here. You know, when it gets time to complete that third step prayer, and I'll normally have some people take 2-3 days or a week and really think about that prayer and what that's about and the work up till then, because the book talks about being ready. And then I tell them, bring a notebook with you when we're going to do the third step prayer, and they'll come over and we'll do that prayer. Then we get up and I begin to go over the instructions for inventory. When I'm doing the work with somebody, I have them complete one column at a time. In other words, they'll finish people, institutions, and principles. We'll take a dictionary and we'll look up what institutions and principles are. And I'll make sure they're real clear in that, and I'll give them some examples. And when they're done with that, I have them come back. And now we're going to look at the second column, and I have them take the first name. And we do some prayer, and they write that out. And I have them take 2 or 3 or 4. This year, an interesting thing's happened is I've got about 4 people I think I'm working one-on-one with, and several of us were inventory at the same time. We all met Tuesday night in my house, spent 15 to 20 minutes in prayer and meditation, asked to be taken in that place, and we wrote inventory for 3 to 5 hours together. It was a wonderful experience. We also all moved through inventory fairly quickly. So when I finish with the second column, it's the same thing. They'll come back to my house, and I review all the instructions for the third, and I have them write 2 or 3 while I'm there, so if they have questions, so that they're clear. Because for whatever reason, maybe it's my ego, what appear to be fairly simple instructions seem very complex. I remember my first few times through, they're very simple, but they seem very complex. And then when I'm done with that, we will spend a bunch of time reviewing the page and a half leading into the fourth step. And once again, we will write some examples. So I really try and be very highly specific with people. And I try and be very gentle in terms of the instructions. And this is what this is. And we use a dictionary and we do that kinds of stuff because we're looking for truth. And the book asks us to be thorough and fearless. So I wanted to mention that, because sometimes those of us who've written a lot of inventory, we just kind of, you know, throw that out there, and you're sitting there saying, if you're an alcoholic like me, the last thing you're going to do is ask a question that makes you look like you don't have all the answers, right? So I wanted to take a minute to explain that. And I do the same thing with the fear inventory, and I do the same thing with the sex inventory. I really try and be there for the people I work with in inventory. I don't just get them to a third step prayer and tell them to give me a call when they're done with inventory. Because, you know, those first two men that did the work with me, I wish they had been a little more specific, but I felt it real important. You have a lot of people up here who've been through this process, so I don't think there's anyone sitting in this room that could ever say I can't write inventory because I don't know directions, because there's a whole bunch of people in both Santa Fe and some in Taos and Albuquerque that know how to do this thing. So, but I wanted to talk about that for a little bit because I think it's real, real important. We just don't have enough time in here to get real specific about that. So
it's not hard to write.
It's not hard to write 4-column inventory with Bill's example right in front of you. Once somebody has shown you the instructions and you look back on 65 and you take one of those resentments against Mr. Brown because he pays attention to my wife, and then you look at which 7 areas are hurt, threatened, or interfered with, and you write those words next to it, and then at the bottom or on the other side of the page or wherever you want, you write your part. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, with explanations? But I would hate to see anybody have to leave here today not knowing what a 4-column inventory should look like. And there's plenty of people that you can ask that are here, like Mark was saying. So you get through that returning home deal, and I usually do it the night... I usually do it literally returning home from my fifth step, but then I like to do it again the next morning because I'm usually pretty drained and I'm usually pretty overwhelmed. And I think there's a barometer, and we're going to see this shift I was talking about, turning the page to 76. There's a statement that says when you're done with returning home. And here's when you're done with returning home: when you've answered to your own satisfaction those questions. So now let's look at the shift from 75 to 76. They're now going to ask you several times in several different ways to trust the power that you've gotten from the first 5 steps. to begin to trust your intuition. It's going to say here in a few pages that you now can develop a sixth sense, a sense beyond the five that we're all somewhat aware of. I was going to say beyond the five that we're all well aware of, but I'm not sure how well aware most of us are of our what we see or what we hear or what we smell or what we taste or what we touch. But we're aware we have five senses. Now they're going to say that there's going to be the work in the first nine steps is going to give us a sixth sense. Now that's an amazing thing. Why doesn't anyone ever talk about the work in that kind of respect? Some things will happen in your life. You'll get some promises, maybe, or not. There'll be things to grow toward, and, you know, you'll feel better, and, you know, things might go your way a little bit, and you'll have some peace. But my book says that 1 through 9 creates within me another sense, a sixth sense, that I can rely on, that I can trust. And here on 76, I believe, is when they really ask me, not that you don't have to trust something doing 4. There was something new in my life the day I made that third step decision and did the prayer, because here's my barometer. 2 months earlier, a man gave me a sheet on how to write 4-column inventory, and I made my list, and I did the second column, and I did the third column, because it was just like what I'd been doing in therapy for 12 years. I got to the fourth column, and physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, I could not write my part with any of the resentments I'd seen from my life, and I put that inventory down. 3 months later, I had done 1, 2, and 3 with a man that knew how to. Got to inventory, made my list, did my second column, did my third column, had a whole different feeling, had a place within myself to go. Inventory would sometimes come from that place, and I didn't feel like I was thinking it up. And then I got to see my part with every resentment I wrote in that entire inventory, and was given the power physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually to write the fourth column. And all that had gone on was 3 months and the work in the first 3 steps. That's my barometer that something happened when I did 1, 2, and 3, the way it's outlined in this book. Then you do 4, and you do 5. You begin to feel something, and then when you get to 6, they're now going to ask you to start to trust your own intuition, because you're not operating alone. You may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now you begin to have a spiritual experience. And when you've answered to your own satisfaction every one of those questions from the bottom of 75, no matter how many times you have to do it, then we'll look at step 6. I think it's sad when people say, there's so little to do with 6 and 7 in the big book. I wonder if they've ever really considered these questions and done the exercise, or considered what the prayer really means that you're going to say here in a minute. So let's look at what it says. I always kind of wondered my first several times why they made such a point that willingness is indispensable. And I would read that and I would go, yeah, I know. I mean, I realized that. Willingness is indispensable. Thanks for letting me know that. Let's get to the next question. Because I usually have this anxious. I mean, like, I'm kind of overwhelmed by my defects of character at the moment from a fifth step. I hear some people referring to 5 like, I mean, not that you don't sometimes feel better, but 5 like you're going to wake up, kind of like 3. You take the third step the next day, your entire will is turned over to the care of God. Well, that's not been my experience. I take the third step and the next day I wake up and I realize I've made some sort of decision here, and I've done a prayer. You do 5, you think you're going to wake up the next morning, your defects are going to be gone. No, I wake up the next morning and I am much more aware of my defects than I was the day before. And much more aware of my defects and shortcomings than when I started 4. So here I am with this. I'm feeling a little better, but I'm also pretty anxious. And I get to this statement, willingness is indispensable, and I think that's not really important until the last question is considered. But there's 3 more in between. Question number 1. Am I now ready to let God remove from me all the things I have admitted are objectionable? And I go, sure. I've just shut off the question with an answer. And there we are, back to the thing we talked about Friday night. Answers shut off the question. You can't get any further than you already have, because you've shut it off with an answer. And I go, am I now ready to let God remove from me all the things I have admitted are objectionable? Sure. Can he now take them all, every one? Why not? Never had a problem with Kenny. I mean, I've seen it in your life, at least, if not in some of the experience I've had sober, my own experience. So we had one. No, I don't like doing that, but it comes from the ABCs, and it comes from the 12 and 12. And that is not only Kenny, but will he for me, just as I am. So we had that question. And somehow that question, do I believe he will remove all these things I've admitted are objectionable for me, just as I am, with all this mud on my face, will he? It takes me to a place where I'm feeling more humble, almost ready for seven. But there's another question. Am I still, see, I'm going to turn this last statement into a question. They write it like it's a direction. If you're still clinging to something you will not let go, you ask God to help you be willing. I need to make it a question before I make it a direction. Is there anything that I'm still clinging to that I'm not willing to let go of that I need to ask God to help me be willing to let go of? And my thought was, go back through the inventory, look at any specific, we're going to look at behavior, beliefs in the third column, defects, anything at all that you can think of from that inventory and the experience you've had with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 that you're not willing to let go of, and write it down. Any beliefs? Any defects? Any behavior? And write it down. And this man said to call him back when I made that list. And I thought he was going to say, well, you got a few things there on your list. Ask God to help you be willing, and let's do step 7. But my next thought was, go through the inventory and write these things down. So I did, and there were 6. This is my, not this current experience with 6 and 7, the one before it, with the Native American man. And I wrote that list, and my next thought was, read the questions you just went through again. And I read, willingness is indispensable. So, glad they told me that again. Am I now ready to let God remove from me all the things I have admitted are objectionable? And my answer changed, and it was no. I got him right here on my list. And I didn't see the answer to that question until I answered the last one and wrote the things I wasn't willing to let go of down. And then my answer to the first question was totally different. No, I'm not ready to let God remove from me all the things I have admitted are objectionable. Here's 6 things I'm not. Can he now take them all, everyone? I don't know. Will he for me? I don't know, but I'm willing. And I saw what they meant by willingness is indispensable. Because that's all I was. It met me right where I am. And I called him and I said, I got 6 things on my list I'm not willing to let go of. And I thought he was going to say, oh, isn't that too bad? Just ask God to help you be willing. You know what he said? He said, you're a big boy now. You've been around this program, and what you're doing is a game. Sit with those things until you are. Made for a real interesting 2 weeks. And I'll tell you what. Once again, admission, honestly admitting there were some things I wasn't willing to let go of, took me to a place where I was. But as long as I thought there weren't any, I didn't get there. All I had to do was admit there were some things that I wasn't willing to let go of, and within 10 days, I think it was, there wasn't one thing on my little list of 6 things that I wasn't willing to let go of, and all I had to do was admit that I wasn't. Not fool myself that I was. Not fool myself that I was ready. Not just go yes, yes, yes to those questions. Answer them honestly. But I didn't see how to answer them honestly until I read the last one. Is there anything I'm still clinging to that I'm not willing to let go of? And for 10 days, I asked God to help me be willing. It wasn't real pleasant, but I became willing. Then I saw what they meant by the next sentence. And now they're going to ask you to trust the power again when ready. So in 2 paragraphs, they've made 2 statements saying to me, trust what you've been given. When you've answered to your own satisfaction, and then in the next paragraph, when ready. I get to begin to trust something that's right there within me. First time in my life. It always came from out here, and I had to put it in here to make it real. Books, movies, drugs, alcohol, your experience, your stories, your poem, your movie, always from out here, this book. I always took it from out here and tried to put it in here. Now I have done some work in here to find something in here that I can trust in here that's there all the time, and now I can begin to trust it. And when I was ready, not one of those things on that list was I not willing to let go of. I did the seven-step prayer. This time, after fist-stepping with this guy and three other people, and the man I had done the work with this time, one of these scary guys from Denver, and two friends, I'd done four fist-steps in it. I did in a 10-day period four fist-steps in a 3-day retreat with a man who spent 10 years with Thomas Merton. I came out of that 10-day experience a bloody pulp. There was not one thing in that inventory I was willing to hang on to. I was ready to let it all go, and when ready wasn't even a consideration, I got on my knees and I did the 7-step prayer. I made my 8-step list, and I'm in amends. That's where I am right now. What about the prayer? We gonna all do this prayer together?
That's something we'd like to do?
How are we gonna do it?
Want to do it the same way? We can either do it where we're sitting, or we can hook up again like we did yesterday. What's the group conscious? What would you like to do? Sitting, just sit where we're at? Okay. I want to make a couple.
Let's talk about the prayer for a second.
Okay, we'll do that. Yes.
Good question.
You do what feels comfortable for you down here.
If I didn't feel I was there, I wouldn't join in the prayer.
Yeah. I want to mention something, too. You'll be amazed what will happen if you'll take a sheet of paper when you get to this 6-step and make that list of beliefs and defects and behaviors. I'll just share one experience that was last year. One of the beliefs that I had to look at last year was I've had a belief that I always needed to have a woman in my life. Wanted to grow old with a woman, blah, 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 blah. And I've taken a lot of action to make sure that happened. I mean a lot of action.
To make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah. Because that seemed to be the way it wound up. But one of the things I began to look at last year, and then I did around the 6-step was, and I had to do what Joe did. I had to sit on this for a while, and that was that maybe it's God's will that I grow old without a woman in my life to manifest his will, and maybe that's the path he wants me on. And I was not willing I was not really excited about that. You know, I like women. But I had to reach a place based on my history of being willing to let go of that, and in there, what I did is I got some freedom. You know, Judith and we were talking last night about this same area again, this sane and sound ideal, and I wish we hadn't had the conversation, because there's a bunch more crap that I gotta, because see, I've done 2 5-steps, and I'm doing some stuff around 6 and 7, and she and I had this conversation last night, and here's what really came up. It's like if you want to do a relationship, and you've done this work for a while, and you're a seeker of God, what it means is you really got to work at this deal. And what came up last night in our conversation this morning, I was wishing we hadn't had it, is, Mark, if in fact that's ever going to happen, you're going to have to work at it. And I'm an alcoholic. It's like I want to cop this attitude. Hey, I'm 47. This is the way I am, honey. Take it or leave it. You know what I'm saying? But see, I got to look at this. Mark, are you willing to give that crap up? And are you willing to take it to God? And if that happens, are you willing to work at it? I didn't tell you that, Judith. I wish we hadn't had that conversation. But it's important stuff because, you know, there's a tendency, I think, to really gloss over some major, major pieces. I've done that with smoking this time. I've never been willing to take my smoking to God in the 6-step. Never. And I did this time. And I guarantee you something will happen with that. It'll absolutely happen. But I wanted to talk about that because that's real important. Beliefs and defects and behaviors to look at that you may be unwilling to let go of, okay? And those are just some of the examples. So let's talk again for a minute then about this prayer.
Who are we asking? We're asking my Creator. What are we asking? That he should have all of me, and I'm going to let go of my judgment of what's good and bad, because I come out of 5 not really knowing. Some of the stuff I thought was good causes harm. Some of the stuff I thought was bad does good. Maybe I want to drop my whole conception about good and bad, period. And give that to him, too, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me one of the only times you can ask God when. Every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I like to say that because my home group ends with that. And whenever my ego is a little off kilter and I'm doing the seven-step prayer at the end of the meeting at my home group, the defective character comes out defective characters rather than me. Rather than stuff in me, it's everybody in my life I'm having trouble with. So it comes out, please remove from me every single defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, right? I now try to say it, every defect of my character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. This prayer ain't about take my stuff away so I can feel better and do what I want. Right? There's a whole focus here.
I was going to suggest, I think we all need to meet God in our own way, but I'm kind of like Tom. For me, it's good to get out on my knees with people and approach my loving Father. Those who want to sit can sit, those who don't want to do it, and then the rest of us who would like to, I think, get in a circle and hold hands and do this, why don't we do that?
A little more humble than when we took the third step. Even the voices. Okay. That amen is the end of a prayer we started at the third step. Now we need more action. Without which we find that faith without works is dead. Now, I shared with you yesterday, now, there's a part of me that had to come to terms with that because it didn't jive with my conception of God. This certainly didn't happen my first time through the work, but a few times later I came to this. Of course, I hear it all the time in meetings, but I came to it in our book, and I saw where it's relevant to what's in this book, and it said, now we need more action. Faith without works is dead. I'm sorry. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. And I couldn't come to terms with that with my conception of God, because the conception I had chosen, you don't have to work or earn or deserve or be right or clean or clean up or do good or be good to go to him. And I came to my own sense, and it's kept me at peace with, why do I do this work? It's not to please God. Faith without works isn't to please him. My work isn't to get faith from him. I don't work to earn it or deserve it. That faith without works is dead is to appease my own spirit. It's between me and my spirit. The work that I have to do to acquire the faith I have in God isn't a gift from God because of my work. It's not an earn and deserve or pay off and do this and you get that, because that didn't jive with my conception. So I got free of that several times ago at this place. We're now going to look at steps 8 and 9. Now, it's funny we didn't mention this during the fifth step procedure, because both Mark and I did this all of our fifth steps this time, and I've done it every other time. You should be, as you're doing a fifth step, be making a list of amends as you see them in the fifth step, because it says, we have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we're willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. See, but I'm stuck on one of those questions if I turn those statements into questions. I don't know if I'm willing to make all the ones I have on my list. So there's a question I need to resolve. First, I need to get my list in order, and then I need to see which ones I'm willing and which ones I'm not, because I can't honestly answer the question we just read, that I'm willing to make amends to them all. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we're going to go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. That's one of the reasons for amends. We're going to attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. See, we're now going to see in black and white, face to face, on these 3x5 cards, and from face to face from the people we've harmed, wherever possible, we are now going to see what our life did when run on self-will. When we were trying to run the show ourselves, which is playing God. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. That's a helpful tool during amends. And then a reminder. Perfect time to remind you, after all this work and you've gotten some relief and you feel a little better and you've come through 5 and you've done 6 and 7, remember, it was agreed at the beginning that you would go to any length for victory over alcohol. And if you need to do an exercise to remind yourself of what any length is going to be from here on, you can do that any way you choose. My commitment is going to be to finish amends. But I got this list here, and I'm not sure about some of them. And I'm not sure if I'm willing. So my sponsor gave me an exercise, and I thought it came from what he was asked to do in the Colorado State Penitentiary because he was locked up. I didn't know the next paragraph specifically says to do it. And here's the exercise. Go through your inventory. See if there's any you've missed that aren't on your list that you made while you were fist-stepping, if you made it while you were fist-stepping. If you didn't make any of this list when you were fist-stepping, you got to go through the entire inventory and put every person and every institution where you see harm from the fourth column. And I've yet to write very many fourth columns about somebody where I didn't see my part was to some degree. Usually for me, if they're in my inventory, I owe them amends. But the arrogance of thinking I don't if they didn't make my inventory is a trap you have to watch out for. Just because you didn't, a friend of mine called me the other day, and I'm in step 8 at the time, this was 2 weeks ago, a guy from my home group, and he calls me and he says he was talking to another friend of ours, and he said to our friend, where are you with the work? And our friend said, I've finished amends for the third time. And my friend said, well, I guess they know each other enough where my friend could say this. He said, don't you kind of feel like you owe me some? And my friend said, why would I owe you any? I didn't write about you. And it really caught my ego because it was the way I was starting to think with step 8. I was only going to make amends to those in my inventory. And I thought, my God, the arrogance of thinking, if I haven't written about you, you somehow don't exist. Or I could not have harmed you in any way if I didn't resent you. And if there couldn't possibly be any harm that I've caused that I'm not aware of because I know all and I see all, right? And it reminded me of something I tell everybody I work with and that I've done every other time. It got me on my knees, and I asked God, show me any other amends that I'm not aware of. And I used my file effects again, just like I did when I made my resentment list, because I got everybody that's close to me in my life in that book. And I don't harm too many people anymore that are like vague out bystanders in my life. I don't have these. I hurt the people I'm close to, and that's just the way it is. I don't like that. But it's hard to hurt someone you're not having contact with. And there's some guys in our group who believe if you remove yourself from everybody and you don't have that many amends anymore, you're doing really great, but you just don't have any contact with anyone. Taking a risk and getting out there in the world and being close to your friends is the risk you take. And you cause some harm. Removing yourself from the world and not being active with people you work with and friends and people in your group and wherever you live, you're not taking no risks. You take some risks, you make some mistakes. This is about cleaning up the mistakes. So I've gone through my inventory. I've prayed to be shown any other amends I'm not aware of. I've looked through personal phone books. I come to their name. I say a prayer. I feel some tension. Things aren't right. They go on my list. Even if I'm not clear there's any specific harm, if I get a tense feeling like something needs to be said between him and I, I'll put their name on my list. So once again, I'm working on a list until I know it's done, just like resentment, just like fear, just like sex. I know when it's done when I know it's done. And I had the experience one day where I know it's done, and now I'm going to take every one of them off the list, and I'm going to put them on a 3x5 card. So those of you that are taking notes, if you draw a square on your paper, big enough to write in the shape of a 3x5 card, I'll show you how we fill these suckers out. I'm sorry, I forgot the exercise that I do before I fill out my cards that comes from the book that they gave my sponsor in the penitentiary. And that is, go through each name on your list before you move them over to 3x5 cards, or as you're filling out your cards, say a prayer. I would say something to the effect, because here's what the exercise is about. Please show me if I'm willing to do. Please show me, God, if I'm willing to do whatever this person may ask, whether I am or I'm not. That's what I'm looking for. And I look at the name, the institution, or the person. And I ask myself, am I willing to do whatever this person might ask to make right the wrong? And I'm honest about it. If I'm not, I put a minus. If I am, I put a plus. And then I fill out my cards. My sponsor says he had an experience in the Colorado State Penitentiary where doing this exercise, he was lifted up and set free before they let him out. And here's what the book says about doing the exercise, and I didn't know it was in the book. Last paragraph, 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. How do I know which ones I have misgivings about? As I look over the list, they're asking me to look over the list, I may feel diffident about going to some of them. Resistant. I see your name on my list, and I think about some of the things I've done that's harmed you. They just come to my consciousness, and then I ask myself, am I willing to go to Stuart and do whatever he might ask? And the feeling comes, no, you trust it. And on his card, I put in the right-hand corner, I'm going to put minus. In the left-hand corner, I'm going to put his name. And I'm going to put his phone number. And if I don't have any of that, I'm going to put the word find. And I know he's one of the ones I need to find. So in the right-hand corner of this card, I got plus or minus, willing or not. I've got, in the left-hand corner, I've got his name, Stuart. I've got his address, and I've got his phone number, or if I don't have any of that, I have the word find. On the rest of the card, front and back, and if I need to staple some more cards to it to fill this out, what I want on the rest of the card is the harm that I'm clear on. And that doesn't mean I want to write on that card, I was selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and I was frightened. I want to write, I lied to you about the money, I didn't pay you back, I punched you in the mouth. All the specific harm that I'm clear on, I caused that person, and you can use your fourth column if you wrote about him, and a prayer to be shown the harm that you caused that person. Everything that needs to be said. Now, do you see how important our fourth column work has been since step four? Everything we needed for step five to admit the exact nature of our wrong came from the fourth column. Everything we needed to ask God to remove in six and seven came from the fourth column. Everything we needed to say and be clear on our 3x5 cards to finish step 8 comes from the fourth column. And everything we need to say to someone in the amends process comes from the fourth column. That's how important our written fourth column is. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So I got a card and I got one filled out. Anybody who's ever done this, please fill one out. We're going to ask for some examples here in a minute. Fill out some cards. Upper right-hand corner, plus or minus. Upper left-hand corner, name, address, phone number, the word find if you don't know where they're at. And on the rest of the card, harm. And I meant to say, sometimes I have a person, like I've looked through my phone book, I didn't write about you, but I looked through my phone book and I felt some tension with you. I came to fill out my card. I found that I was willing to do whatever you might ask. I knew your name, your address, and your phone number, but I wasn't personally clear on any harm I've caused you, but I know the air needs to be cleared. On my card, I put, ask. And that's someone I'm going to come to. And when we get to, you'll know what ask means by the time we get through the amends process. I'm going to come and I'm going to ask you, have I done anything ever that's harmed you we haven't talked about that you need to talk to me about? I'm going to ask that person to help me see any harm I might have caused him.
Share a couple things on my experience this time. Again, when I sat down with Joe and I did my fifth step, we made my list of amends, and there were several times in there where he and I would explore. I might be doing a resentment on one person. We would explore were there any other people that were hurt as a result of this relationship, and so that added some amends to my list. When I got back to Texas, we called and talked a little bit about some stuff around six and seven, and. And one of the gentlemen he did a fifth step with asked him a question. I want to share it with you because it has to do with willingness. The question he asked somewhere in that process was, he said to Joe, does this stuff bother you? And so Joe shared that question with me. So the man I'm going to do a fifth step with in Kerrville, I told him ahead of time that that's a question that I would like him to use with me. Throughout my fifth step, when God basically had him ask me the question, and he did, and here's what happened with that question. It moved me into a state of willingness, probably at a much faster time period than I normally would have. because I begin to see the truth of my part in those resentments. And when I was asked the question, does that bother you? You bet it bothered me. And the end result of that was, I've seen already from just having done it only one time, because this is just something brand new that happened with Joey, shared with me, and I gave to the man I did the fifth step, but it already moved me very quickly, because it did bother me so much, into a state of willingness to make the amends. I think it's real important that you say a prayer about names that may not be on any of your inventories, and that God be willing to show you. I do the same thing Joe does. If I'm sitting there and I've done that prayer, and someone's name comes, or their face, what I ask myself, is there any tension? Am I uncomfortable at all? And if I sense anything at all, I put their name down. I don't judge that if it comes to me. We've all had that happen. Some of us make amends. You make amends, and these people, they ask you, what the hell are you doing here? That doesn't really matter to me. If it comes to me, I do that process. And then I go through and I fill out the cards. I want to mention something about where it says, as we look over the list of business acquaintance and friends we've hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Understand what we're doing with amends. We're going to people on a spiritual basis. We're not there to say we're sorry. We're not there to figure out what the outcome is. We're going to people on a spiritual basis.
I'd like to do one thing and then take a 10-minute break. What I'd like to do is do the mechanics of step 9, how to make an approach to somebody, whether it's face-to-face, a letter, or on the phone. But here's the rule. If at all possible, it should be direct, face-to-face. The exceptions should be graveside, obviously, phone calls, and letters. But don't call anybody or write to anybody if you can possibly see them face-to-face. The power comes in face-to-face. You caused harm to them face-to-face. You didn't harm them over the phone or by letter. You directly harmed them. You make direct amends if at all possible. We're going to find these principles and these directions when we come back after the break, and we're going to read from 77 to 84, and then we're each going to share some experiences with amends. Then we're going to take another break. Here's the format I was given. I still use it to this day. 5 points. Number one, this is why I'm here. We're going to see where the book refers to. They should understand why I'm here, and then it's very important. Number two, this is the harm I'm clear on. The harm I'm clear on.
Now he's saying, this is the harm that I am clear on. This is what I'm clear. This is how I feel I have harmed you.
Bruce?
Yeah, in a 12-step program of recovery.
Some people choose to say AA member. As part of my recovery, it's very important that I do this. I like the person to know that, I like them to understand this is very important for my life that I do this. Whether you say it's part of my spiritual growth, part of a program from recovery I'm involved in, sometimes it opens the person up to asking you for help. You never know what might happen by being honest while you're there. You never know what's going to happen in making amends, period. Some amazing things will begin to happen. So this is why I'm here. I'm going to go through one here in a minute after we get these written out. This is the harm I'm clear on, which is going to be from my card, but I don't sit there reading my card. Now, if it might get emotional, this is jumping ahead a little bit. If it's with someone, it might get emotional. I got my card in my pocket before I leave her house or his house. I'm going to go in the bathroom. I'm going to go in the bathroom and say a prayer before we start, probably. And before I leave, I'm going to look at my card in the bathroom probably again, or as I'm leaving, to make sure I didn't miss anything, if it gets overly emotional. But you don't want to sit there like a robot reading off some stupid card. So this is why I'm here. This is the harm I'm clear on. Now that one of the most important ones that takes the arrogance out of it. Is there anything else I've done that hurt you that I don't know about? And then shut up and listen. Then, since we're pretty insensitive people, at least I am, I like to ask this question. Do you need to tell me how any of that hurt you? Because I might know exactly what I did to you. We might have it all out here on the table, and I might not have any idea how that hurt you. I've had some I thought were extremely big deals. They didn't remember who I was. Talk about deflating. I've had some I thought were no big deal at all, and they said, you really hurt me. This is why I'm here, the harm I'm clear on. Is there any other? Do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you? Number five, the magic question of all. Is there anything I could possibly do to make right this wrong? Footnote, star. If financial, arrange the best deal you can before you leave.
My experience with that fourth question, do you need to tell me how that harmed you? It allows them to get clean. Because I had made some amends and hadn't done that. And when I was introduced to that and made the amend, something happens with that. They get free. They get free too. That's a real powerful question. Do you need to tell me how this harmed you? Judith?
When people you owe money to say they don't want any money back from you, sometimes it's good to pray about where you might send that money or where it belongs in the universe and trust what comes. You think you've had to trust the power up till 8. Now it's really time. You're moving out into the world. Can we stop for a minute? Who did it? Just so he had the guy's name and he had that he was willing to make. 77 to 84. We'll make some comments as we go. Let me mention those that are taking notes. Just a couple things that we've done here between 7 and preparing for 9. We finished the 7-step prayer. We went back through our entire inventory, making sure anybody we harmed, people or institutions, are on our list. Then it said to spend some time in prayer till you know the list is done, asking God to show you any other amends. And if you have personal phone books or anything you can think of looking at to help take you back through your life or currently people in your life, use those as tools to see any other amends. Work on that list till you know it's done. Then we talked about an exercise marking each one plus or minus. Am I willing to do whatever this person might ask, or am I not willing? Sometimes you'll find that there's ones you're willing to do whatever they might ask to right the wrong. And the intuition is that you're willing. Mark it, plus. Sometimes the feeling is I'm not ready. Mark it. Be honest. Be honest with how you mark your cards, plus or minus. Then we talked about filling out cards. Plus or minus in the right-hand corner. Name, address, phone number in the left-hand corner, or the word find, so you know it's one of these that you need to find. And then the rest of the harm on that card that you're aware of. Anything you're aware of you did to that person you think might have harmed them. Let's talk about one more thing now that your cards are done. Put them in piles. Let's say pile number one is willing to do and know where they are. Let's say pile number two is willing to do but I need to find. Let's say the next pile is out of state, willing to do, know where they are. Let's say the next pile is out of state, willing to do, not sure where they are. Let's say the next pile is not willing to do and I know where they are. And the next pile is not willing to do and I need to find them. So my next question to you would be, how do I get the willingness to do the ones I put negatives by? By doing the ones you put a positive by. Each of those separate piles is done, you'll be willing to work on the next pile. It's happened every time. By doing the ones you're willing to do, you'll get the power and willingness to do the ones you're not, just from the freedom you get from doing the ones you are willing to do. Let's just start on 77.
If we seem to get a little animated around the ninth step, it's because we get animated around the ninth step. How free you want to get, and AA is so full of reasons why you can't finish amends and make amends. And that has not been our experience. So we do get real animated about this, and we want to be real specific with what is in the book. And again, there's some people in your area that have experience with having made all of the amends. So there's some people to talk to in that area.
That could be a good thing to do that Mark just mentioned. If you had a stack of cards like your first time, you got this big pile of cards, or if it's your umpteenth time, and you got this big stack of cards divided into piles, and every 10 cards you put a card that just says on it, how free do you want to get to answer any questions you might have about moving on? And it'll always come down to that. How free do you really want to get?
One other thing that's so handy about the cards, there are two times when I do the work where inanimate objects speak to me. One of those is when I'm writing inventory, and maybe I have my inventory in the office, and I'm getting ready to go to bed, and I walk past my office, and this little voice says, Mark, I'm in here. I'm waiting for you, Mark.
You can have your inventory in a briefcase over in the closet locked up, and in the middle of the night you hear this little voice, I'm over here. This is your inventory. And you're off cleaning the kitchen and doing rugs and stuff that never gets done any other time of the year except when you're in inventory.
Yeah.
Or when you have this pile of cards on your desk over in the other room in your office. Yeah. And you hear this little voice, you've got amends over here. Yeah. Right?
See, the cards allow you to carry them with you. And that is, for me, it's helped me. Because when I carry them with me, if I'm in my briefcase, and I open the briefcase, hi, Mark, how are you? How free do you want to get? When I used to make it just a list and I put them in a notebook, they're in an office somewhere, right? So there's some real benefits to these cards. Some of us just physically, they're there, and they're there in front of you. So let's go over this. Start at the top of page 77. It's talking to some people, we need not and should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, I'm trying to put my life in order, but this is not an end in itself. My real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to the people about me.
That's the reason for amends. They told me at 4, they told me at 5, they told me at 9. My real purpose now.
It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce we've gone religious.
That's a guiding principle.
Quick experience with that had to do with one of my marriages. The woman had left and within about 60 days had moved in with a man, and I was being lied to about that. And then I found that out, and she came to me and wanted to make amends. And I said, there's no way, shape, or form I can sit and listen to these amends right now. Get away from me. And I've had that happen twice myself, where someone's still real angry with me, wasn't the time to make amends. Once again, see, I'm making amends then for the wrong reason. So I back off of that and give it time, and gotta let you know. It says in the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to be branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in the demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. And that's, for example, as I find out when I owe people money, they think it's real neat I'm sober and seeking God, but they want their money. We don't use this as a mere excuse to shine away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question to how to approach the man we have hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. Remember, second column, I'm looking for truth. I am looking for truth. There are bad people in the world. Do not let your pious keep you from seeing the truth. Oh, he's spiritually sick. Truth. There are assholes in the world. There are bad people in the world. Truth in the second column. Till I see the truth in the second column, I can't move into a state of forgiveness. I've got one of these I'm working on. I have a man that I've done some work with who's living with an ex-wife. When Joe and I did a first step, he asked me a question. How do you feel about this? This was on a Wednesday. I said, I'm not going to make amends to that SOB. That's how I felt. By Sunday, I'd been moved to a place where I wanted to go make amends. I'm not happy about this. This is not going to be a fun deal, right? I want him to come beg at my feet and grovel. This is what I've got. This is a guy that I got into some real heat around this deal, right? But it's telling me what this is about. I need to go to this man.
There is an exercise, Mark just referred to it, we wanted to do today, a whole nother theater of the lie, looking at part of inventory from a different perspective. But let me just try to explain it for a second. It was hard for me to understand the first time. What we tried to do yesterday when we got to step four was show you a way to review 1, 2, and 3 each time you sit down to write. So what we basically did was we looked at the first three steps after covering them from the point of view of inventory. You can use inventory to review 1, 2, and 3. And we did theater of the lie, looking at the third column, exploring the different personalities within one ego. And I think most of us understood what went on in the theater of the lie to see each of the, some of the different personalities when faced with one resentment that the ego has. Now, there's another exercise you can look at doing if you can begin to understand. It's kind of covered in Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount, a forgiveness exercise before one approaches people they owe amends to. I don't know if he put it in those terms, but he calls it a forgiveness exercise. And see, that's what I'm seeking here in 9, from you. But I also need to give it to you before I ask it from you. And that's why it works for an alcoholic, because in the very thing we seek, we give it easier. And it's in giving it easier, my forgiveness to you, because I seek the very thing from you, is your forgiveness. Once again, we're not getting this forgiveness business because of virtue. I'm not going to come and forgive you because it's a nice thing to do or I'm a wonderful person. I'm going to come and I'm going to find a way to forgive you before I make my approach so I can come and see you so you can forgive me. Because that's what I desire. Sounds selfish. Probably is. But both are going to get free here, hopefully. Purpose of amends isn't just for me. It's to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. But it's also about you getting free, too. That's why I give you the chance to say what you need to say. So here's an exercise that one can look at. And Mark just covered it when talking about going to someone you still resent or like slash enemy. To find forgiveness, to go to somebody in a helpful, because it's going to talk about going to make amends in a helpful and forgiving spirit. To find that forgiveness you need to go with to that person's house, to go in a state of forgiveness of them, go back to your inventory. Look at the second column with that person and ask yourself, did they really do that? If they did, admit yes. If they didn't, admit no. But an honest admission about the truth in the second column sets you free to forgive that person, whether they did it or they didn't. And it comes from admitting the truth about the second column. Now we're going back to examine the truth about the lie. First time through, we saw the second and third column were all lies. Now we're going back to examine the truth about that lie to find forgiveness to go to that person to make amends in a helpful and forgiving spirit. So what he does here at this point, the man who showed us how to do a theater of the lie, he does a theater of the lie where reviewing 4 from the point of view of 9 to find forgiveness to go to those people by looking at the truth in the second column. Did this person really do this? Yes, she did. Can I forgive her? I can only come to that forgiveness if I honestly admit the truth about the second column, what I think they did to me.
Let me just quick, I'm just going to add something to that, because I've made some notes when I heard this, because I have some amends to make this time that have to take care of some forgiveness, but it's back to I look at the second column. Is it true? I admit that it is. Take it to my heart. The state of consciousness that comes to us in steps 1, 2, and 3. I admit it. He is wrong here. She is wrong here. I fully and freely forgive him or her. I forgive and forget the whole incident. I bear no malice. I give up my right to retribution or revenge or compensation. I wish him or her well all the days of their lives, and I want for them everything that I want for myself. Now we can make the amend. Now we can look at where we're wrong. We can now seek the mercy we have just given. I forgive my trespasses as I forgive those who trespass against me.
We now seek the mercy and forgiveness that we have just given.